Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. And, Jim, this is kind of like good news too little too late, but at least someone admitted it. It is the Republican, the co-chair of the Commission on the Presidential Debates from 2012, Frank Fahrenkopf. He was obviously involved with the establishing of the three presidential debates and the one vice presidential debate. And he says everything was right except for the selection of Candy Crowley to moderate the second presidential debate, the town hall style format that you and I love so much. And, of course, is most famous now for her interjection, incorrectly, mind you, defending the president, saying that he did, in fact, call Benghazi an act of terrorism the morning after, when it's pretty clear that he didn't and still wasn't 2 weeks after the fact. So that's perhaps even a little bit rosy of an assessment. I think some of the other moderators could have been better as well, but at least there's an admission that it happened.
What's significant about this is that, you know, the Commission on Presidential Debates generally always wants to say, to sound a little bit like Chip Diller and insist, all is well. Everything's fine. Don't worry about this. You know, yes, Fahrenkopf is a token Republican member of the Commission on Presidential Debates, but it's good to hear the acknowledgement of the obvious, which is that, look, Candy Crowley, besides the you know traditional notion of, oh, the moderator wasn't unfair to my guy, look, she decided she was going to be more active. And instead of letting the candidates speak, she was going to instantaneously fact check the statements of the two candidates. And she just, you know, she got it wrong. I mean, if you're going to take that role, you know, when you decide to say, I will be the fact checker, you have a real obligation to get your facts correct. And as we've seen from, you know, the newspaper and magazine and web-based fact-checking columns, my most famous example was one in which when, you know, Mitt Romney said that the size of the Navy is smaller than it was, you know, 30 years ago, they gave him a pants on fire rating, of course, even though it was literally true. Oh, literally true, but look at all this other data isn't really saying it's a lie. That's not really a fact check. You could say, well, okay, here's some other information that we may feel is relevant, but you can't say it's a pants on fire lie. Now, in the case of this, Obama did use the word terror in his lengthy statement on the day after Benghazi, and but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't specifically referring to Benghazi. It was talking about acts of terror will never deter Americans, yada yada yada. And I don't think anyone can genuinely, you know, look at the statement of that day and say Obama was calling what happened in Benghazi a terrorist attack. And so, you know, she got it wrong, and she got it wrong with the country watching. And in the post game show, so to speak, she came out and said, "Well, actually, now I look back and yeah, you know, like, well, gee, Candy." Nobody's watching the CNN post-game show. You know, everyone was playing. Now you tell us. It's good to see Fahrenkopf acknowledging this. When this comes up in a couple of years, it's worth noting. And, like, Candy Crowley really should be the poster girl for bad presidential moderating. And I think that, you know, with that one mistake, she ranks as the all-time worst. And I think that the fact that Fahrenkopf isn't hiding and trying to insist everything is fine and the fact that he's willing to talk about this now is a good sign that we will hopefully, you know, you can't solve a problem if you won't acknowledge the problem. And it's good to see somebody on the Commission on Presidential Debates acknowledging the obvious.
And she may have diffused the issue in the third debate. I mean, clearly Romney was playing it safe in the foreign policy debate, but when asked point blank about Benghazi, he never even mentioned Benghazi. So clearly he was a little bit spooked by that whole episode in the town hall debate.
Gene Romney took the field and lined up in the victory formation.
Yeah.
Took a knee. Didn't do him a play.
Too bad they didn't look at the scoreboard. Anyway, to martini number two now. And Jim, it's mid-February, so clearly this is the time of year when gas prices are sent skyrocketing. No, it's not traditionally. Yet, that's still what is happening. USA Today, among many others, reporting that we could be seeing record highs, certainly for this time of year. There has been an average cost of gasoline now at $3.75 a gallon. It's gone up pretty much every day now for most of this year. By the time the summer and late spring driving season actually comes around, things could be much, much worse. One of the experts in this story from USA Today expects $4.10 to $4.25, an average of gasoline around the country, out in California and Hawaii and so forth. It's already there. They chalk it up to state taxes being a big problem as people continue to raise the gas tax in different states. But another thing is government regulation at every level with all these different blends. Stuart Varney on Fox was talking about this and saying that even from county to county in some of these liberal states, you have different requirements. And so when all these refineries have to shift to different blends and try to create all this stuff, it really screws up the supply line, and we're paying the price for it.
That's one big factor. I will also note kind of the interesting thing. But I'm hearing Middle East tensions cited as a reason, which I, you know, Greg, is it just me or is actually, doesn't the Middle East seem a little calmer than usual? I mean, you know, I'm just saying, like, we haven't seen, you know, it just seems like there's been, you know, more active saber rattling, you know, in the past six months ago, a year ago. The Iraq war, you know, at least the U.S. is no longer involved. We have a president who is determined to not have a conflict with Iran, no matter what kind of provocation, and certainly won't stand with Israel in a confrontation with that. So if anything, you think the Middle East would be a little bit, you know, not a factor. I just finished a post over a campaign spot on this, and there's two other points to put into this. One is that, so apparently a couple of the refineries are switching from the winter blend to the summer blend, and they have to take offline some of their production as they're making the changes. And this is apparently happening all over the East Coast. A couple of refineries have shut down. Hess gasoline has gotten out of the oil refinery business. And so those scenic and pleasant smelling facilities you see going past New Jersey Turnpike on your way up to New York City, featured in the opening credits of The Sopranos, they're not operating anymore, which strikes me as a rather horrifying, you know, point. It's wonderful to hear from Christy on this, because look, this was one of the joys of living in New Jersey, was that it had cheaper gas. And why was it cheaper? Because the refineries were right there. It was a lot easier to get the refined gasoline to your various gas stations. So you have that. As you know, listeners probably know, we have not built an oil refinery in this country since the mid-1970s. And what's more, there was an effort to build a new one, the first new one in 30-some years, out in South Dakota. That's been going on for 6 years, and it's been tied up in lawsuits and permitting and all kinds of paperwork issues. There's now a new effort that maybe they'll build one in North Dakota. Now, look, if we talk about energy independence, I'm glad to see the fracking revolution. I'm glad to see natural gas getting coal. I'm glad to see the U.S. becoming a net exporter of gasoline. That's fantastic. But if you know, without the refinery, you know, you can't just drill the stuff out of the ground and put it into your car. You know, we it requires refinement. And without refinery capacity, drivers are going to be as in as much bad shape as they were when we had the usual external foreign reasons for high gas prices. So it is grim and it is frustrating. It will require a completely different attitude towards oil refineries, which people don't want to build because they think they're dirty and smelly and ugly. And, you know, the end result is $4 a gallon gas.
Yeah, I'd much rather have the cheaper gas and maybe a little bit of tinge in the air. But for the most part, they really can move these things forward environmentally where that's not even much of a problem
anymore.
Imagine
what kind of revolution, you know, advances we've had in the past 30-some years.
Right.
You know, it's not 1970s technology anymore. It can get a lot better. So anyway.
Yeah, just sad. Supply, regulation, government has really loused up what should be much cheaper energy right now in all different forms and fashions. On to martini number three now, and this might be one of the best crazy martinis we've had in a very long time. For those who are students of political history, you may remember the 1996 Republican presidential campaign and tire magnate Maury Taylor briefly being in that campaign. He didn't get a lot of attention, but he did run for president that year. He's the CEO of Titan International. It's a tire maker, and this is from Reuters. He has delivered a crushing summary of how some outsiders view France's work ethic in a letter saying he would have to be stupid to take over a factory whose staff only puts in 3 hours a day. Here's his quote. The French workforce gets paid high wages, but only works 3 hours. They get 1 hour for breaks and lunch, talk for three, and work for three. I told this to the French union workers to their face. They told me that's the French way. Titan is going to buy a Chinese tire company or an Indian one, pay less than 1 euro per hour wage, and ship all the tires France needs. You can keep the so-called workers. And now François Hollande, the French leader, is working on a response. But I got to love Maury Taylor there, and you got to love the fact that America's work ethic, despite our economic woes right now, is still lapping the French by leaps and bounds.
My guess is the French economics minister will probably have a lot of sneering, you know, a lot of sacre bleu and merde and words like that. But in the end, look, France, you want to have a less than 40-hour work week. You want to limit people doing overtime and things like that. That's what you get. And, you know, this is a globalized economy. And periodically you hear stories like that and you get the feeling there are a lot of people who would prefer to not live in a globalized economy. Unfortunately, you end up paying a lot more for everything because you have to produce everything domestically. You can't import from places where the labor is cheaper. You can't import foreign goods, etc. But my guess is people's desire to deny economic realities is pretty deep-rooted. And my guess is that the French will spend – instead of looking at the French and saying, dang, you know, what this guy is saying is tough but accurate. You know, it just doesn't make sense for them to hire us. We just don't make enough tires at a good enough price for him to make a, you know, he can make more money everywhere else. you know, you're not owed any investment anywhere. All right, you can't force people to invest in you if you're not willing to work hard and demonstrate productivity. This is, you know, where we are. And so it's one of those things where I think you'll hear a lot of demonization of this guy. The French have become public enemy numero un in France. But in the end, look, he is the voice of economic reality. And it'd be nice to see the French kind of take this as a wake-up call and say, look, we have to be, you know, competitive enough to win, to get those tire workers. And maybe we can't talk for an hour and have an hour lunch, an hour break, and only work for 3 hours a day.
Certainly true, and obviously we wish these jobs were going to the U.S. Maybe if we lowered our corporate tax from the highest in the industrialized world, we might be a little bit more competitive on some of these things. So we've got our issues as well, but work ethic compared to the French is not one of them. Jim?
Tasty brie and great wine are only going to take you so far.
Jim, you've got some time off the next couple of days. Enjoy that greatly, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.
Looking forward to Monday. See you, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review, Daniel Foster of National Review Online will be here in his place Thursday and Friday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Dan and me on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.